Hey, kids, it's time for
Surf Shorts!
Welcome to the Surf Shorts podcast, an innovator in modern storytelling, looking towards the future, using business terms like radical, off the lip, caught inside, and totally tubular. Surf Shorts, the storytelling podcast, recorded on VHS, then downloaded to cassette for maximum audio quality. It's totally radical.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Surf Shorts. This is Matt. I'm sitting here with
Jimmy.
Hey, what's up, dude? How you doing?
Man, I'm stoked to be here, Matt. Thanks for having me on board here at Surf Shorts, and been checking out the podcast recently on your tip to do so, and I've really enjoyed it. So I'm excited to be here, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming. I want you to know, like, when I was like, hey, I'm going to do a podcast. First, the idea came around just standing in the backyard with some friends that you would know. And we were just standing around, and within like 10 minutes, three of us had told really good stories. And I was like, I always do a little writing and stuff. I'm like, man, this would be a great book. I could just go around and collect stories and release it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that sort of evolved into, well, why don't I just record?
Well, do you remember when Ray Funderburk did that, the Cape Fear Coast surfing like history book? Did you ever see that?
Yes.
I believe I'm getting the name right, Ray
Funderburk. I think that's right too. And I think he also set up the surfing museum at UNCW. I think it's the same guy, because believe it or not, and you will know to laugh at this, you will know that this is a joke. He contacted me. Hey, I need copies of Surferpalooza. I need like Surferpalooza 2, 3, and 5 or whatever. So those videos, and anybody that's listening that's in some other part of the world, thank you for listening. Do not watch. These are just very poor surf videos. How I knew him.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought it was interesting that he had taken on that project. And as I read through, there were obvious people that, you know, I recognized: Bill Curry, Will Allison, folks like that. And I just thought, man, you know, this is cool. I feel like there's a lot more to elaborate on.
Yeah.
You know, being a, I was born in 72, started competition surfing probably in 82.
Yep.
And just, you know, that kind of opened up the Pandora's box to the surf community and getting to know the real players in the surf community. And in those days, it was a small community. So
yeah,
I think that fed into, really still feeds into who I am today, you know, just as far as like idolizing some of those great men that rode waves and, you know, and gave me great advice and really kind of got me going down the road in my life, you know, because I didn't exactly come from the, you know, the most ideal childhood, but I was provided for by all means, but you know.
Sure. But this is sort of like a break into a whole new scene.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another mutual friend of ours whose name I won't mention was talking to me about the show and how he liked it. And I'm trying to get him to come on. He is a surfboard rep right now. He's our age. Anyway, and he basically had a similar story about he didn't grow up on the beach, and he actually had a life tragedy that sort of pushed him hard into the surfing world, and it, you know, was a big deal to him.
Yeah.
And it opened up his world at a time he really needed it.
Yeah.
When I was starting this podcast, it really, you know, I wanted a lot of the stories to be, you know, East Coast Central. But really, it's, you know, try to make it a whole world thing. You know, we've got a lot of Mexico, and have a guy from Portugal this Friday coming on, and I guess that episode will come out later. But
yeah, well, when I listened to your prior pods, I was like, oh well. And you asked me, I said, well, I'm just gonna pour on some more Mexico, because that's kind of where we went when I was, you know, in my early 20s. That was like, it was kind of the go-to spot. And it was obviously before social media and just the access to information that we have today. So it was real raw, in the fact that we opened up Surfer Mag, you know, literally looked at a map of the coast, and it would have small write-ups about breaks. And, you know, from that, we would just use our imagination to kind of paint a picture of what these spots might look like. And it just, I think that drove the curiosity for us to drive, you know, through a really scary spot, being the central Mexico, where you cross over in Brownsville to go on down into the
So you were driving.
Yeah, we drove two different summers, and I think, you know, today we're going to talk about the 94 trip.
Yeah. Well, the same thing, like with me, I would look at a map. Imagine, like, you look at the little juts in the coastline, and you're like, okay, well, this is an Arctic swell that's coming down from here, and wouldn't it bend? Or, and it doesn't really work that way in real life.
Right.
Kids today, or anybody today, that they don't understand, like, this information was not available.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's like anything. The chase is always as exciting or better than the actual catch. You know, that's why they call it fishing and not catching. And,
yeah,
you know, the same could be said about, you know, a lot of things, really.
Someone that listens to the show came up to me and she said, I think your show should be called Adventures in Surf Shorts.
Yeah.
And I was like, I like the acronym, but...
Yeah.
But she said, because you know, a lot of the stories aren't really surfing. They're things that happen around surfing. And I really like that. And I may, like, I have some other friends with crazy diving stories and other just waterman's stories.
Sure.
That we might do an offshoot of it. But,
well, I always say surfing doesn't always require surfing, you know.
That's
like,
right.
It can be the adventure to find the surf, and then you never even actually make it to the lineup.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I have a trip I intend to take. I tried to take it 3 years ago when I had this little trawler, but I have a trip that I will take.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just with my son, maybe with everybody, all the kids. You know, I have a big mess of a family. And I would like to take this trip. And you know, we both have similar pilot house boats.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go up from Cape Lookout, cut the back way, and go all along Corbanks where nobody lives.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, there's a channel behind Corbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And people were talking about the Outer Banks of North Carolina, but we're talking about really an unexplored almost section of North Carolina where there would be no people on these banks for miles and miles.
That sounds cool.
So I think it'd be cool to, like, go up through. And, you know, you might not ever catch a wave, but you could.
Yeah, right. And just the adventure of that. My wife and I just did the Hampstead to Southport.
That's awesome.
Trip. And she was mad, not mad, but she was like, I was aggravating her, but I kept saying, babe, we're in the shipping channel.
Yeah.
And I must have said it like 30 times just because, you know, I was kind of excited to navigate through that. And it's simple, really, but it was a fun trip.
Yeah. Yeah. When you hit the river and the markers switch and you see the channel go to 40 feet, like, you know, this is not the waterway anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
It's cool. So you guys drove, like, you drove down to Mexico from North Carolina.
Yeah, so it was the summer of 94, and my buddy John had a Ford Bronco 2 with it was a stick shift, and my buddy Jack, we don't say last names,
that's
correct?
Right. You're exactly right.
I heard that before. So my buddy Jack and John and I, we accumulated our quiver.
So Jimmy, John, Jack.
Yeah, Jimmy, John, Jack, the three J's, we piled into this Ford Bronco too. And we just, you know, took the trip on by, we took it upon ourselves to drive to Mexico just through studying maps, having the desire to catch waves. We had all brand new boards. I mean, I was riding Terry Sennett's back in those days.
And I remember that.
And I got, you know, we all had a couple of Terry Sennett boards and different, I think Jack had a Rosin.
Mm-hmm.
Really, just we just had really nice equipment. We focused on getting good equipment.
Sure, Rosin was
like a sick. You know, back then we were like 6.60s, and then we had a 6.6 and like a 7 foot. So we had like a, you know,
brought a minigun with you.
Yeah, kind of like a step up quiver. Yeah. So you can imagine we were in this Bronco 2 with, you know, 9 brand new surfboards piled on, and we're like, you know, these gringos traveling. And we get to Brownsville, and I guess I should tell this part of the story, but we basically got into the country, and then we had to, we got to a checkpoint and had to turn around and come back. And when we did, we got pulled over by Border Patrol.
Oh, yeah. That would look suspicious.
And accused of, you know, like having, you know, drugs. And of course, we had nothing.
They thought you went and picked something up.
Yeah. And so we were just like, we spent like a half a day getting out of that, just to make the long story short, because that's not the point. But we spent a good bit of time there just like pleading our innocence.
So Border Patrol stopped you.
Yeah.
Right? Border Patrol?
Well, they didn't stop us. We got into the country. Right. And then we didn't get a certain pass for our car. So when we got to another checkpoint, say 30 minutes inside the border, they made us turn around. So then we came back through U.S. border through customs to get the pass, which is on the U.S. side.
Yeah.
And got held up for like a good, you know, couple hours, it felt like. You know, yeah. It felt like a whole day at that point.
This is your first trip to Mexico?
First trip.
You're 22?
Yep.
Yeah.
And we just looked suspicious, you know, like we were just these kids, really. And there was these zero tolerance policy papers all over the place, like our banners, you know, like zero tolerance for any drugs or whatever. We're like, sir, we really don't have anything. And, you know, once we get into the country and got down there, we arrived at Pasquale's, which is the first beach that we you know, get to when you drive down, taking the route that we did. And we had heard stories from previous friends, Mike and Brian. I just got to say it as Mike Carter and Brian Puskas had been there years prior.
Yeah,
Mike and they had created these, you know, stories about it. And so we're, or experience rather, these stories. And so we went there, we pull up on the beach, Matt, and it was just like pumping. I'm talking like 20, 30 feet, kind of onshore, kind of stormy looking. And we're just like, okay.
I don't want any of that.
And the guy who saw our boards on the car and kind of greeted us, you know, there's always one of those guys, right?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, there's a couple of guys out down the beach. And we look down and we see this dude drop in and just skip down the face. I mean, he wasn't riding. He was.
Yeah, he was like a pebble going across the pond.
And he just ended up getting pulverized. And we're like, okay, we should at this point just break for camp, you know, which for us equated to getting a room. And I think it's called it's either Kalima or Coleta. So we got a room there and we turn on the television. Of course, it's in Spanish and it's showing, but we're good at looking at pictures, and it's showing a storm coming at us, a hurricane. And we had no idea, you know, you got to think this is 94. Yeah. I mean, we're not like inundated you're with media.
You're probably I know if I'm going to Mexico, whatever, I'm probably hoping to catch like head high to a little overhead waves and just have a good time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not looking for, you know, double overhead Puerto Escondido.
Well, I think at 22, you know, we wanted to be challenged. I mean, we had bought the boards to meet the challenge, you know? So we were hoping to find some good waves, challenging larger waves.
I think maybe I'm putting my 50-year-old brain on that trip. Yeah, right. You're right. At 22, you were looking for a little juice.
We were ready to charge,
but not onshore 20 feet.
No.
Yeah.
No. So we, you know, upon getting the room and seeing the news, we were like, okay, we kind of did an assessment being from where we are. We've seen hurricanes, ridden out hurricanes. You know, we were in a brick structure. We were fine. We slept like babies because we had been traveling for, you know, two days.
Oh, I'm embarrassed. Like, I totally neglected the fact that you were in the path of the hurricane. I thought you just meant there was a hurricane off the coast pumping surf. Like, there is a possibility this storm is coming to where you were.
Oh, no, absolutely. It was like riding up the coast. And it was one of those, you know, that didn't really just jut straight west. It did like a northern turn and was coming up the coast. And we battened down the hatches, got some good night's rest. We woke up the next morning and the whole town was in like, you know, like it is anywhere after a hurricane. It was like, but we're in a third world country first time. And we're just like, wow, like, look, no power, nothing. You know, we had a tank full of gas. We went back to the beach at Pasquale's and we said, well, we're not surfing here. It's just out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point it was like easily 30 feet.
Yeah.
You know, and just really unsurfable, not to mention all kinds of things in the water.
Sure.
And at this point we had mapped out we wanted to go to Rio Nexpa.
Yeah. You know?
And so we're thinking, let's go down to Nexpa. It's a point. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get out there and catch some waves. So that ended up being I think typically that's about a 4-hour drive. I think it took us 16 hours.
because of the roads.
Because of the roads were out, and it's like, you know, where the mountains meet the coast. So you're just in and out of passes and down in valleys and back up. And
are you driving through rivers, like, or are there bridges? Cause I'm thinking old school Costa Rica. All right, right. You four-wheel driving through rivers to stay on the road?
Well, for the most part, there's paved roads, but it's funny you ask that, because we got to a point where we were where there was a bridge, and the bridge had gotten washed out.
Right.
And so the river was a small enough river that people were able to, like, huck things across it.
Right.
And in some cases, drive across it. But there was a line of people getting supplies for the locals, you know, back and forth. And we didn't want to really interrupt that. So we kind of had to post up and, of course, get a brew and just kind of watch what was going on.
Yeah, because they were doing something important.
Yeah, and we were just trying to catch a wave, correct. Yeah. And so we just kind of sat back that for most of that day. And then eventually we made that pass. We drove through the river, and we were all three sitting in the truck like, can we make it? I think we can, you know, and we charged it across in the Bronco, and we got across and we were good. So then we arrive. We left at daybreak, and we arrived at Rio Nexpa like probably an hour before dusk, you know.
Right. You got to look at the surf at least.
Oh, yeah. And we get there and we meet Jorge, who is the owner and of the point, along with his family. And he took us in with open arms. And he's like, yeah, guys. And he's similar in age.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, man, check it out. Of course, it's still giant. I mean, the ocean is just moving mountains. We're just kind of like, yeah, there's the waves, like through binoculars, like way out there. And it really, the point wasn't even.
It was too big for the point to function properly.
It was not even defined at this point.
Rio, yeah, because this is people that are listening, you may or may not. We're talking about a river mouth point break.
Correct. Yeah. Big Which cobbles.
Is, yeah. It's not like Rincon. Well, it's not, we're not imagining this jutting out of rocks point break.
No.
Yeah. It's a river mouth point break.
Yeah. It's rugged in every sense of the word. Yes. And the inside is big, and they call it the Liquidora. It's like a pinch point. It's way bigger than anything you're used to seeing in magazines or anything like, and you got to think the storm had dumped quite a bit of rain. And so there was a lot of outflow. So we look at it for a minute. Jorge said, well, we'll go to a beach break and try to surf there. And we had a little bit of daylight left. So we went to a beach break, and it was giant and still just wasn't looking friendly. So here we are, day two in the country. We're not surfing.
Yeah, and it's not the blue, clear Mexican water. It's chocolate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dark chocolate. I mean, the white water is brown even, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And out of the river are all kinds of palm trees and things that had gotten taken out during the storm, and it's just flushing. We kind of set up camp at Jorge's place, and we meet these, I think it was like four guys from Florida, and they were... they were characters. I mean, you know, these guys had been there for a minute. They had ridden out the storm. I mean, they had stories. And over the bonfire that night, we talked about going out the next morning, that we were going to, we had to go out. I mean, we were at this point, 48 hours in the country, new boards. We weren't thinking much about the safety. We just had to get out there.
Amped.
So we make a pact at the campfire that night with the Florida guys, like, we're going to be looking out for each other tomorrow, and we're going to charge. And they're like, yeah. And so the next morning at dawn, we go to the river mouth, and the strategy is to jump in the river mouth and kind of let it push you out to a point.
Like old Shell Island.
Yeah. Like Shell Island.
But on acid.
Yes. I mean, it was, you know, there's no lifeguards on duty, not even anything. But at any rate, we jump in the river mouth. You know, it's so funny to think back, because I guess, you know, you don't have, you know, now you're thinking about it like, gosh, I would never do that.
Yeah.
But then it was...
hop into a hurricane swollen river and let it push you out into tremendous waves in a foreign country with no one around.
Yeah.
Where if you drowned or disappeared, you would go wholly unnoticed.
Yeah.
You mean you don't want to do that anymore?
No. And you know, I have to throw this tidbit in because when we're walking down to the river mouth that morning, Jorge's brother had caught a huge snook.
Nice.
You know, and I was like, well, I guess there's our dinner for tonight. You
yeah.
know? And so that was a good deal. But, you know, so we jump in the river mouth. Okay. All kinds of things are going through your head, right? Like
yeah.
you're paddling out and you're just hoping you're going to live and you're looking out for your bros. And
hey, what are you riding?
I think I was riding I had a 610 that I like.
That's yeah.
Yeah. I didn't want to ride my biggest.
Terry Sennett. Terry yeah. Sennett. That's the guy's name, right?
Yeah. I had a 7.2, I think, also. But I didn't want to ride the biggest board I had because I thought, well, gosh, I don't want to go from like a 6.2 to 7.2. Like,
yeah.
And I thought the 6.10 would suit me well, you know. And so I took the 6.10, Terry Sennett. We paddle out. We get out like, you know, fairly unscathed. I mean, you know, we get out to the point, but it's not really like the point is moving around, right?
It's typically too much water.
Typically, and in the days after, we figured we had it wired, but on this day there was swells coming in from what would be the north, the south. I mean, they were just converging. There were big A-frames. It was just doing all kinds of funky stuff.
Yeah, and you don't need A-frames on a point break. That's the purpose of being at the point break is you just need a single direction for your swell and everything will be fine.
Correct.
Yeah.
But this day there was just, it was, the ocean was alive, you know, by all means. And so we are out there and, you know, kind of trying to pick a wave out. And I remember Jack was behind me. He kind of went for a wave. John was a little further out. Jack went for a wave and he missed it. And I looked back, you know, because I was like paying attention to what he's doing. And I looked back and the horizon just stacked up. And I said, I just turned and paddled. And all I could think about was Jack being behind me. I said, man, he's not going to make it. I barely got under like a couple of big ones. And, you know, it basically took Jack and washed him all the way in. And I said to John, I said, hey, man,
he's gone. You know,
Jack's gone.
He's gone. Yeah.
And so, and by the way, two of the four Florida guys made it out. The other two didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're looking up on the beach for Jack and we had already talked about this. So Jack's waving his board and it would be compared to like looking from the south end at Crystal Pier all the way to Masonboro, you know?
Right. So
for reference, you feel
like you're looking a mile away for someone waving a surfboard.
Absolutely. And he waved his board and we're like, okay, he's good. And so John and I proceeded to catch a couple of waves apiece. And, you know, I know to this day, that was the biggest surf I've ever surfed by far. I mean, it was, you know, by my estimation, 18, 20 foot faces.
Wow.
Yeah. You know,
and not friendly.
No, not friendly. And it was kind of, you know, I remember watching surf videos when I was a kid and they said, sometimes you'll go out and if you catch one or two good ones, it might be that day where you just are happy with that.
Yeah.
And that was ringing true in the back of my head. I thought, okay, I got a couple of good ones. I survived.
Yeah.
I haven't died. I'm going in, you know, and full accomplishment, you know, just like, so we surfed, you know, that day. That was, I want to say that might've been the only session that day. The next days after were just phenomenal. The ocean just started cleaning up. The swell was still plenty good. Like, you know, I would say double overhead plus sets and just reeling. We really got to know Jorge. We made some really awesome turns. Of course, in those days we didn't have video or
right.
I think I still have some like old steel shots, you know, and with no zoom or anything.
Yeah, like a speck on the horizon.
Yeah, you're like, oh, what is that? Well, that would be off the top. You see a little water, you know, just not a lot of like documentation. More just in our brains about what we accomplished on that trip.
Sure.
And a couple of days later, so we had no idea, but Mike Carter and Brian showed up.
What?
At the spot. And we're just like, what? You know, exactly. And we were just blown away that they were there.
That's some classic Riceville Beach stuff.
Yeah.
Like you can be anywhere and turn around. And you're like, I know that dude.
Yeah.
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, Mike just comes rolling up.
It comes rolling up with Brian, and we're just, it's kind of like a, you know, like a reunion, you know, like,
yeah,
we had, I mean, we knew Mike and we had surfed with him some, but you know, we really got to know Mike at that point. And, yeah. And we were super stoked, of course, to see him. Plus, he had some peanut butter and things that we needed, some American provisions that, sure. that he had Jiffy.
Yeah.
And we were stoked.
It's such a big deal at yeah. that point. Yeah.
We had some good food. And so we are what we perceive to be good food. But we served our brains out. And Mike was even, I remember him saying, like, man, you guys are taking off deep on the point. And I said, well, you know, we've been here for a couple of days, Mike. And we, the first 2 days, we were just surviving
right.
this spot. Yeah. So now we're paddling deep into the point and making it around sections, going left. This is primarily, it is a left, really.
Well, and you know, like, here's the thing, and I talk about this sometimes on the show, and it has to be, you understand, and anybody close to our age understands, this is actually a time when riding a mid-90s surfboard was good.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
really,
yeah,
it wasn't a lot. The mid-90s surfboards, like, I'm pretty critical of.
Yeah.
And I'm no expert, so anybody can tell me to shut up. But they were all too long, too thin, too much rocker.
Yeah.
And all that stuff works just fine when it's firing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you guys are loving it. Now, I know the Rawson, I rode several Rawsons. I didn't own one myself. And he was a local motion guy.
Mm-hmm.
Really good surfboards.
Yeah.
When the waves were really good.
Yeah. Yeah, they were definitely gunned out. You know, I think yeah. probably the average was 18 inches wide.
And exactly,
yeah. 2 inches thick, you know, 2 1/4. If you had anything thicker than 2 1/4, it's like you had this fat 80s board.
I feel like I rode a 6 to 10 1/2, 18, 12 1/4 tail, something yeah. like that. And mm-hmm. nowadays, instead of throwing out all those dimensions, the kids, which is anybody, they yell out the liters,
yeah,
which is great. That's such a good idea, but we didn't have that back then.
Yeah. I have to, in self-admittance, well, whenever I started the cert, I had the double wide shop, which you and I talked a little bit about right. in the beginning, but when I got the shop, when I
this is a skate and surf shop that Jimmy owned, for y'all that don't know. So when you started your surf shop.
Yeah. I had servers would come in and just talk my ear off about, you know, incremental dimensions, and
you want to bash your head on.
I was turned counter. Off by it. I was like, man, and that's right when the leader thing started coming yeah. into play. And honestly, I just got over it, talking about all the incremental dimensions. I just was like, yeah. man. And I had this theory, that I would go in a shop and just grab whatever board under my arm, and I could kind of tell if I liked it by just putting it under my arm and feeling the rails and the
I was literally about to say that.
And like, looking down the nose at the rocker, and
yeah. And you know very well that I'm an average surfer. In no way, on no planet, is anybody going to come to the beach and there's surfers out there and they're going to be, oh, look at that guy, because it ain't me, because I'm average at best. Okay. Yeah. And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But if I'm in a surf shop and I grab a surfboard, I can hold it in my hand. This is going
to
work.
Yeah. Well, to me, the best surfer is the ones having the most fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm having a good time.
Yeah. And yeah, so I just kind of got over the dimensions at that yeah. point. Now, prior sure. to having the shop, I did pay a lot of attention in the 90s.
It'll wear you out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the people using all these dimensions or whatever are saying, you know, I work for CB and people would order surfboards. And I'm like, ugh, you don't want this. This is too small. This is too narrow. This is too thin.
I think there was a whole era of that, of people ordering boards that were all those things you just said. And when you got to your feet and you got a couple of, kicks down the line, you could make that board work.
Right.
But what people tend to forget is, in, especially on our waves, you only have like a couple of seconds to get to that spot. And if you don't get there, you're never going to really ride that, you know, get the experience that board.
If you don't get that first pump in.
That's right.
It's not happening.
It's over.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's funny now, Matt, because, you know, being 50, for a long time, I was like a lot of the shortboard friends of mine, like, I'm never going to ride a longboard. And
right.
And when I started riding a longboard, I was like, oh, this is fun. And now I kind of liken it to not being stressed out when I go out on my fun board or my longboard.
Right.
When I take my shortboard, I just feel like there's like an expectation of performance, you know, and I'm yeah. like, I don't really need that, you know,
yeah.
like I'd rather just have fun.
Yeah. Well, I want to have you back sometime. I mean, we could just do a whole show on just skate barn beginning to end.
We could. Yeah.
Yeah.
That and the ESA and everything. Yeah.
For
I have
sure.
a lot to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. But man, thanks so much for coming, dude. I really appreciate it. And you yeah. really were, when I thought about doing the show, you were one of the first people I said, man,
oh, man,
Jimmy on here. It'd be awesome.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And thanks for having me, of course. And thanks for keeping the community and everybody informed and the stories going, because I think it's important.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
Absolutely.
All right.
All
see
right.
you, man.
Shaka.
Shaka.
Surf Shorts Podcast.
Hey everyone, thanks again. Thanks so much for listening to Surf Shorts this week. I really enjoyed talking to Jimmy. He's got a lot to say. I'm sure he'll be on again because he's got other trips and other experiences. I cut this show short. We actually keep talking for another 30 minutes and we talk about the Skate Barn, which is a pretty renowned skate park that Jimmy owns, and he also owned a surf shop, so he knows a lot about the surfing business. If you remember early in the episode, really one of the first ways I knew of Jimmy was I used to work at a bar on the beach where the surfers went. So I knew who he was, and I was cleaning the bar one night, and into the bar we had pictures and newspaper clips and things like you did in the 90s. And there was a clip of an ESA contest with his name on it when he was a little kid. And I always thought that was the coolest thing. Funny that he didn't know about that. I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, I'd love for you to contact me, surfshortspodcast@gmail.com, or follow us on Instagram @surfshortspodcast. I'm also on Facebook. We have a website also. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can go there. You can click on all sorts of podcast providers, Apple, Stitcher. You can even talk to Alexa and say, hey, Alexa, play the Surf Shorts podcast, and she'll do that for you. Really appreciate you listening. Come back next week. Every Thursday at 9 a.m., a new Surf Shorts podcast come out. Everyone, thank you so much. Peace out. All right, y'all, listen. I say surf, you say shorts. Surf.
Shorts.
Surf.
Shorts.
I say, wait a minute. I think that pretty much covers it.